Today is the octave of Easter. We celebrate Christmas and Easter, those two great feasts of the liturgical year, for 8 days. So this is still Easter Sunday. And so we're going to have the renewal of baptismal promises right after the homily. We're using incense just like we did last Sunday, because this is still the greatest feast of the church year. And we read about certain resurrection appearances as we are going to reflect for the next 40 days, 50 days, about what resurrection for Jesus meant and what it means for us. And so, in the same way that last Sunday was all about baptism, and on Saturday night, on Holy Saturday night, we baptized several adult people, and we're going to be baptizing infants throughout the Easter season as well. It's about baptism. It's about conversion. It's about transformation. And in that gospel story, we have a wonderful example in Thomas. Thomas, who goes from a kind of a stubborn disbelief to belief. It's a conversion story. And he goes from that willfulness to giving the most powerful expression of faith that's in the entire New Testament, "My Lord and my God." And there's a little bit of Thomas in all of us. You know, the reason we sign ourselves with that baptismal water every Sunday, and the reason we're going to be sprinkled this morning, is because baptism wasn't just once. It's an ongoing reality, and we grow and deepen in our realization of what our baptismal promises mean to us and to the church and to God. And ours is a conversion story, and it goes on and on, perhaps on into the kingdom. Will we ever fully embrace the infinity of God? Will not eternity be an everlasting growth? Will there ever be a time when we'll stop growing, when we'll have it all? Well, we don't know, but I'm thinking probably not. Growth is, and change, you know, for 14 billion years almost, creation has grown and changed and transformed, dying and rising and giving and receiving, and one generation of every living creature being replaced by another. This is the way the universe works, because God created it, and this is the way God is, in that eternal dying and rising, giving and receiving that's in the Trinity. And in baptism, we have been begotten into that mystery. Now, that first reading says that he was begotten by God. Jesus is eternally begotten of the Father. That's one of the things we pronounce in the Creed every Sunday. He's eternally begotten of the Father. That this begetting was not just one timely event, but there's an infinity to this begetting. But one time for each of us, we went through that font and we were begotten. Because the font is the womb, it's the rebirth, it's the begetting into the new creation along with Christ. He's the firstborn of the new creation, but we get begotten by our own baptism. And the church is forever embracing new members, begetting new members. And so, in the same way that Jesus is begotten of the Father, so are we. Now, part of that baptismal experience and part of that immersion into the paschal mystery of Christ has to do with priesthood. And so in that gospel story, Jesus comes to them and he says, "Peace be with you." And then he breathes on them and says, "Receive the Holy Spirit. Whose sins you forgive, they are forgiven them. And whose sins you retain, they are retained." We might remember that when Jesus forgives people's sins, the chief priests and the scribes get all upset, because only God can forgive sins. Who are you to be claiming that you are forgiving this person's sin? And Jesus can do that because Jesus is God. But then he says, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. In the same way that I'm begotten, so are you. In the same way that I'm the Son of the Father, so are you, daughters and sons of the Father. In the same way that I have this priestly ministry of reconciliation of sin, of reconciliation of the divisions of the world, you have that too. But be careful how you minister that, because sometimes you're going to retain sins. And perhaps you shouldn't be retaining sins, but in the same way that we're given free will to either love God or not, to either do good or not, we're given the power to forgive sins or not. And so we constantly have to be praying for the grace of our baptism, for the grace of our priesthood, for the grace of our sharing in the ministry of Christ to save the world, so that we use that responsibly and wholeheartedly. And you know the old saying, to err is human, to forgive divine. And you see, we've been invited into divinity. This isn't just admiring what Jesus did and who Jesus is. This is embracing that for ourselves, accepting the gift of divine life and the gift of the ministry of reconciliation of the world. And it's to act divinely. And what does it look like to act divinely? Well, you don't hold a grudge. And you don't hold sins bound. You release them. In the garden, after the fall, Adam and Eve are cowering in fear, and they're aware of their nakedness. And when God comes looking for them and finally finds them, he says, "Who told you that you were naked? You've never been naked to me. Who told you that you should be ashamed?" It's sin that does this. But God doesn't condemn them. He reaches out to them in love and mercy. And Jesus, God's Son, does the same thing in that gospel story. Here are these men hovered in this locked room out of fear. And it's the same fear that drove them away from Jesus at the cross. Remember that there were only his mother and a couple of other women and John that were at the foot of the cross. All the rest of the disciples fled out of fear. And so when Jesus on Easter Sunday morning comes into that upper room despite the locked doors, what does he say to them? He doesn't say, "Where were you when I needed you? Where were you when I was hanging on the cross?" He could say that, and justifiably so, but he says, "Peace be with you. I'm not mad. I'm not holding on to this. I'm extending the very peace of God to you." He reaches out not in judgment and not in condemnation, but in mercy. And that's so important for us to remember, because we can easily get down on ourselves and feel hopeless about our own sin or hopeless about our world. But one of the reasons we gather here around this altar of sacrificial love over and over again, one of the reasons that we sign ourselves in that begotten font over and over again, is because we have to keep believing, we have to keep hoping that despite our sin and the sin of the world, God reaches out in mercy and says, "Peace be with you." That the end of this story on into the kingdom is not a tragedy, it's a comedy. It ends happily, and just like a fairy tale, and they lived happily ever after, and that's the end of the story, and we know that, but we have to keep hanging on to that because the world is telling us a different message. So we have to eat it and drink it over and over again. We have to hear that scriptural word about the peace and reconciliation that God is offering us so that we don't lose hope.